On WIPR, we're on the record. I'm Sheila Cast. Good morning. Laura Lippman's new novel is powered by a plus-sized Baltimore widow, Muriel Blossom. A decade after she lost the husband she adored, and he adored her, she still talks to Harold in her head every day. But circumstances in her life are changing, some beyond her control, some she's taking charge of. Mrs. Blossom is reaching for things she's missed in life. When we meet her at the British Airways counter at BWI, she's setting off on her first ever trip outside the U.S. She's booked herself and her best friend for a springtime cruise up the Seine River from Paris to Normandy. Why would she expect anything but amazing cuisine, inspiring art, and warm friendship? Why? Mrs. Blossom may not know because she's inside Laura Lippman's latest thriller, but we know because the title is Murder Takes a Vacation. A murder presents itself pretty quickly, but oh, who and what is behind it takes a gripping plot and dealing with some fascinating characters to discover. Laura Lippman is with me in the studio to talk about it. Welcome back to the show.
Always happy to be here, Sheila.
I got to start with the name. Your heroine is a warm, kind woman. She is not aloof, not haughty, but nearly everyone, including most of her friends, calls her Mrs. Blossom, not Muriel. What's that about?
It's fun to say, and it somehow suits her. Mrs. Blossom started as a secondary character in the Tess Monahan novels. And at first, seen through the point of view of Tess, she wasn't given her due. I guess I'm saying that my own character was a little bit ageist when she first encountered Mrs. Blossom.
Tess, the private investigator, didn't pick up her own ageism.
No, and she didn't see Mrs. Blossom's amazing potential. But she wears flowery dresses when she married Harold Blossom. I think that sort of became a joke that then became a habit. And she just presents as Mrs. Blossom. I think ultimately there's something a little bit old-fashioned about her, even though she's only 2 years older than I am at this point.
She is 68 years old. You've just outed that about yourself.
Oh, I'm never shy about announcing my age. I love to tell people my age. I love asking for the senior discount. You just see me at the Charles. I'm like, do I get a... And they're like, do you want me to prove it? And they're like, it's okay. Anyone who claims it can have it.
That's a good policy. Of course, the other big thing to know about Mrs. Blossom is that she is a big woman. Four pages in, you take us straight to the word so often sidestepped. Quote, Mrs. Blossom was a large woman. Okay, fine. She was a fat woman. Her grandchildren kept telling her that the word fat was okay now, even preferable, that it was a factual term and should not be stigmatized. Close quote. Why did you want the heroine of this mystery to be a fat woman?
Well, Mrs. Blossom already existed in my world. And part of the reason I wanted to write a book about her is because I did feel I had shortchanged her. One reader thought I was ageist when I wrote about Mrs. Blossom because she wasn't very interested in tech. And at the time I said, well, that's just my mom. At the time, there was a much bigger age gap between me and Mrs. Blossom. And she was always, I will use the word, fat. And while I had never gotten any feedback about Mrs. Blossom and her size, got a letter a long time ago from a reader who felt they had detected some fat phobia in one of my books. And I took that very seriously. In the book in question, we were inside the POV of someone who seemed nice but turned out to be toxic. So I felt like this was probably an okay choice for this book, but it was the kind of letter that really made you think about things. I mean, most readers, if they get mad at you, they don't engage your curiosity because they're coming at you guns a-blazing, telling you how awful you are. But this was a very smart, interesting email, and it really stuck with me. Over the pandemic, I began reading a lot and listening to the podcast of people like Virginia Soul Smith, who writes a lot about fatness and diet culture. Aubrey Gordon, who does a podcast called Maintenance Phase, in which they look at a lot of diets that are going to fail because diets almost always fail. And Aubrey, for years, had written a column called Your Fat Friend under that pseudonym. And she's since gone on to write two more books. There's a documentary made about her. And these women became very influential thinkers in my life and got me to sort of, I was already on this path because in 2018, I very publicly gave up dieting and wrote about that.
Uh-huh.
And that was important to me. And I have a teenage daughter now, and I see the world that she lives in. And she really tries to practice body positivity, and the world does not make it easy. So yeah, I'm what Virginia Sulsmith would tell me to call straight size. Mm-hmm. You know, I can wear a size 10 in a department store. And yet, I don't know a woman in our culture who doesn't understand this to some effect, of having a body that's critiqued, you know, either complimented or critiqued. And I just felt like this is who Mrs. Blossom is. And I now have this opportunity to write about this wonderful woman who, whatever her problems and issues are, she doesn't have a problem with her size. She's not dieting. She has embraced the body that she has for a very long time, but she's aware that there are people all around her who are judging her every day, every minute. And I just felt like that was reality I wanted the book to reflect.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Laura Lippman about her 30th novel, which she's launching tomorrow, Murder Takes a Vacation. Let's get to the mystery. British Air upgrades her to business class, her first upgrade ever, and she's seated next to a good-looking, silver-haired lawyer from Columbia, Maryland, who is very solicitous. What should we know about Alan Turner?
Alan is someone who, like Mrs. Blossom, arrives at the airport very early, which is part of the reason she gets upgraded, is she follows the rules and is there 3 hours before her international flight. I mean, we don't learn a lot about Alan, but I would say that the most important thing is that it will be a question throughout the book, how genuine was his attention? What were his real aims? What was going on that flight? And it's not a simple answer, but it's that's as important to Mrs. Blossom as the actual mystery in the book, is knowing, was Alan Turner truly being kind to her? Was he truly interested in her? Or was he just attempting to use her?
He, seated near her, next to her in business class, gives her a pill, which he says is melatonin, to help her sleep. What happens?
She falls asleep quite heavily. And when she arrives in Heathrow, where she's supposed to change for a flight to Paris, it turns out, according to Alan, it's much too late to make that plane and that she should stay in London for the night and take the train to Paris the next day. And he treats her to a pretty perfect, wonderful day in London.
And she agrees to the train, which is something for her, pushing her out of her comfort zone because she's claustrophobic, or can be.
Yes, as can I. So the concept of the train that goes under the English Channel, it's really something if you're a little bit claustrophobic. So I knew exactly what I was writing about in that case.
And more interesting characters come in. And obviously, I don't want to give away the plot, which is so gripping. I had to stop reading before I talked to you because I didn't want to accidentally give something away. So I don't know how this all plays out exactly. So let me ask you this. Mrs. Blossom has spent this past decade since her husband died living near her daughter and son-in-law with the nickname Trout in Arizona, helping to raise her two granddaughters. That's changing.
Yes, they're moving to Tokyo, and they do not ask her to join them. And she feels that she's sort of implicitly not welcome. The girls have gotten older. They need her less. Their housing, their lodging in Tokyo will be much smaller, much tighter quarters. So she's decided to move back to Baltimore and to try to figure out how to start a life on her own. You know, it's It's something I've been talking about or writing about as this book nears publication, is that Mrs. Blossom and I have more in common than most people might realize. You know,
I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Because you wrote in your Substack newsletter to people who love your work, read this, that this is perhaps the most autobiographical novel I've written. I don't get it.
It's about a woman in her 60s starting over. I'm the same thing. I started over 5 years ago when my marriage ended, which was unexpected. And I know from us chatting before we started recording that you were a little bit dubious about Mrs. Blossom's windfall, which comes about in a very strange, serendipitous way.
It looks as if money has fallen out of the sky.
Almost.
What should we know about
it? It's a lottery ticket. She finds a lottery ticket floating in the breeze and in a parking lot, and she picks it up because, you know, obviously Mrs. Blossom is very anti-litter. So
of course, it's the litter.
When I divorced, there was a financial settlement. And unlike, you know, theoretically in principle, I always had access to that money, but I didn't feel that way when I was married. You know, I mean, we kind of each tried to pay our own way. There were certain things that my ex, who was making television money, could pay for that I couldn't. And then when we got divorced, that money was not quite split in half, but I got a big chunk of it. And all of a sudden, this money that had been so abstract to me was very real. And I was like, oh my goodness, I have to manage money now. I mean, my ex said one time with absolute justification, he's like, you're a little bit of a financial dilettante. And I was like, yes. When you're married to someone who out earns you 10 to 1, no matter how well you're doing, you tend to feel like, it's pretty small stakes. It's like, you know, oh, I got a royalty check. I'll buy some new shoes. And now I am a woman on my own, paying all my own bills. And I felt like I wanted to give Mrs. Blossom a similar experience. I wanted her to feel that she had the means to buy a new apartment, decorate it how she wanted to. I mean, that's something else Mrs. Blossom and I have in common, which is part of when everything was divided up in my marriage, I ended up with this very small one-bedroom apartment in New York that my accountant was like, oh yes, you should sell that. That's a silly thing to own. And I walked into it one summer morning in 2023 and I looked around and said, no, this is going to be where I retire, because I think being an old lady in New York is really great. And this, I was like, this is where I will retire. I will not sell it. And we had used it as an office, so it was very kind of bare bones. And I redecorated it. And part of the way I redecorated it was I sold a lot of jewelry and put that into furniture and art that includes lithographs by Joan Mitchell, who is Mrs. Blossom's favorite artist and one of mine. And it is just one of the most satisfying things in the world that I can go to New York and be in this, you know, very small but very pretty little place that's very much my place. Because, you know, I've been living with someone for 20 years and you forget how many compromises are involved in marriage. And then you're off on your own and you're like, oh, wait, I get to make all the decisions. This can be like a super girly apartment. And that's what it is.
This is so much fun. We need to take a break in our conversation with Laura Lippman about her new novel, Murder Takes a Vacation. She's launching it tomorrow evening at Whitehall Mill on Clipper Mill Road. When we're back, is it Mrs. Blossom's size or her age? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Laura Lippman's 29th or 30th novel, depending on how you count, will be out tomorrow, Murder Takes a Vacation. It follows a plus-sized Baltimore widow in her late 60s who's breaking out of her shell. At the same time, she becomes the target of ruthless international criminals. Laura Lippman is with me in studio. Laura, you have collected every award a mystery writer can win, some of them in multiples. It's always fun when you remind us some of the craft of other mystery writers in your work. So who do you evoke in Murder Takes a Vacation?
Oh, you know, there's definitely some Agatha Christie in there. The subject matter, if not the style, tips its hat to Dashiell Hammett, whom I always like to remind people has a definite Baltimore connection. Grew up over on the south, or was over on the southwest side and worked here. Those are the primary two. If I think about cozy writers that I've always read and admired, the first two comes to mind is the late Margaret Maron, who wrote just a delicious series of books about a judge named Deborah Knott. I think a lot of people in our area probably know the work of Donna Andrews, who's in Northern Virginia and has written, I can't count how many books Donna has written, and a lot of them are about a blacksmith named Meg. And they always have these very, they always have titles that are puns that include birds. I don't know how she does it. I don't know how anyone's come up with this many bird puns over a long career. So I'm a huge fan of the cozy mystery.
Is this a cozy?
It absolutely is. There's no two ways
what
around it.
What makes it a cozy?
Well, a cozy, first of all, is defined sort of by the lack of really sensational violence. You know, there's not a lot of violence on the page.
I was going to say, there's some violence
here. There's some violence, but I mean, you know, you're not going to have a serial killer in a cozy novel. It tends to take place within a closed community, a village, on a ship. The people know each other. There's usually something very personal at stake. Not a lot of cursing, but it's more the form. There's a gentleness to it. It's a book that I think has some sense. You can read a cozy with the lights off and it won't scare you.
Well, Tess Monahan, the dynamic private investigator who starred in your first dozen novels, shows up in Murder Takes a Vacation. What's the connection between Tess Monahan and Mrs. Blossom?
Mrs. Blossom ultimately spent a little time working for Tess doing surveillance, at which she is simply fantastic.
Why?
Because she's old and nobody sees her. It's almost a cliche now to talk about women being invisible as they reach a certain age. And Mrs. Blossom sometimes turns it on its head, and she realizes it isn't just that she's invisible, but that no one's paying attention. I think there's a passage in the book where she talks about she would almost sometimes play it to the point where she would go up to her subject and engage them in conversation and try to show them a map. And like, no one wants to get away from you faster when you're an old woman with a map. No, they don't want to have that conversation. And so she's a good observer. She's really smart. I think that's one of the things that was missing when we saw her from Tess's POV, is just how smart Mrs. Blossom is.
That's novelist Laura Lippman with me in studio on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her new cozy suspense novel, Murder Takes a Vacation, which she's launching tomorrow evening at Whitehall Mill. Is Mrs. Blossom more marginalized because she's fat or because she's old?
That's an excellent question. And as a non-fat person, I'm not sure I'm capable of answering. But people definitely get marginalized when they're old. And, you know, I have a lot of young friends. I'm in a group chat with them. And every now and then I get the okay boomer pushback. I mean, sometimes I hear things about what boomers do and what boomers say, and I'm just baffled. I'm absolutely baffled because I just heard this on another podcast. I was listening to a podcast called Every Outfit, which does recaps of the TV show and Just Like That. And they were saying, oh, she's doing voice to text. That's so old. That's so boomer. And I'm like, I have never in my life done a voice to text. I type my text very properly. Like, I find it also interesting, but I think if anything, though, the one thing about aging, everybody's going to do it. If you're lucky enough, you live long enough to get old.
I would love listeners to hear a conversation you wrote, Mrs. Blossom, on the cruise ship deck with her new friend, Pat, who expresses skepticism about how the world looks at aging women.
The world seems to suggest otherwise. To be an old woman, I know people complain about being invisible, but that's not what bothers me. It's the sense of being an affront. An affront? An offense, almost like a bad smell. People don't like the old because it reminds them that they will get old and eventually die. Aging is seen almost as a disease, something to be fixed or arrested. All those tech billionaires trying to hack their bodies. What a waste of money. You know, I would have been an excellent billionaire. Certainly I'd be a better one than those silly men obsessing over their abs. You've said that before, Mrs. Blossom said. The billionaire part, not the abs part. I don't think I would be a good billionaire. You seem to be doing pretty well as a little old millionaire. How do you know I'm even that? Mrs. Blossom felt as scandalized as if someone had commented on the color of her underwear. First of all, $1 million isn't what it once was. Almost 9% of Americans have at least $1 million. And while this cruise isn't the priciest option, it isn't cheap. You don't strike me as someone who would spend a disproportionate amount of your savings on pleasure. Pat probably was trying to be complimentary, yet her assessment stung. To be a person who others perceive as not being willing to pay for pleasure. How dutiful, how dull. Mrs. Blossom was the country mouse to Pat's glamorous city mouse.
There's also kind of a resentment I pick up in Mrs. Blossom.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, I think that Mrs. Blossom feels that it was terribly unfair that even though she had a long marriage, her husband dies at a relatively young age, at an age certainly sooner than expected, and he dies suddenly. And I think she feels cheated to have lost him and has trouble getting past it for various reasons that come out in the book. But I don't know if I would use the word resentful. I think it's more that she's mad at herself. She's mad at the opportunities not taken. She regrets being somewhat timid for much of her life. And she would like to learn to be bolder.
What's your next book?
That's an excellent question, because I've been working on a very different book, which is dark and complicated and giving me fits, which is about how dangerous boredom can be, which I happen to believe that people, when they're bored, can get themselves in a lot of trouble. But I also have ideas for more Mrs. Blossom stories. And if my publisher asked me to change course and do another Mrs. Blossom book right away, I'm ready to go.
What's next for Mrs. Blossom?
Tuscany. Tuscany, which I know quite well, is I have been there many times to teach at an old farm that's been turned over to tourism. I'm going again this November.
Something to look forward to. Laura, thank you for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sheila. It's always a delight.
Laura Lippman will launch her new cozy mystery, Murder Takes a Vacation, tomorrow at 7 p.m. at Whitehall Mill on Clipper Mill Road in Baltimore. We've got more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. If you missed part of today's conversation, subscribe to the On the Record podcast. Glad you're with us on the record. We'll be back on Wednesday.